Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight. I'll be your host on this Friday, June 27th, 2014. We have a story that just went up on InfoWars. Border Patrol says that cartels are using de facto amnesty to smuggle, quote, whatever they want, unquote, into the U.S. Now, that's a report from Rob Dew and Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs, working with Kit Daniels. Rob Dew and Joe Biggs are at the border in El Paso. That's where they did that exclusive interview. They're going to be joining us later in the show. We're also going to be joined at the bottom of the hour with Paul Joseph Watson. And Alex Jones is going to be coming in with a special report. You know, on Fridays is the day that new releases come out at the movie theaters. And this is not a movie that's coming out today, but this is a movie that is going to be coming out, the sequel to Prometheus. And Alex Jones is going to break that down with what he knows about it. And we're also going to have on the show today a psychiatrist, Peter Bregan. This is someone who he's a practicing psychiatrist, a very extensive resume, an author of many books about the negative effects of SSRIs, of Ritalin, other drugs, the counterproductive effects of these drugs, as well as someone who has fought lobotomies early in his career. In the 1970s, he fought against lobotomies coming back. And if you remember back in December, there was a Wall Street Journal investigative report about what the VA did to veterans after World War II. If they had problems with PTSD, they just gave them lobotomies. Well, today, the DARPA and Obama's Brain Project, they're looking at other ways to deal with PTSD. They're looking at ways to selectively delete memories. Think about that. That brings Orwell's predictions about putting stuff down the memory hole into a very literal interpretation. So I want to talk to him about these new technological approaches to essentially doing lobotomies, the danger of that. And certainly he is someone who is aware of civil liberties issues as well. So we're going to have Dr. Peter Bregan on with us later in the show. It's a very packed show. Now, this article that just went up about what's going on at the border of El Paso, this is Stu Harris of the National Border Patrol Council. And he said that the cartels are pushing groups across the river to tie up our agents. He said, meanwhile, our agents are tied up processing and feeding these people, changing diapers, and the drug cartels are running whoever and whatever they want across the border and other places. He said, who or what is coming in? We don't know. And we won't know until something bad happens. Now, that is something we should really focus on, because as we look at what's going on in Iraq, as we look at the total failure of what we have done, the cost that we have suffered in terms of lives lost, 4,000 American lives, more than that, who knows how many Iraqis have died there, the massive amount of money that has been spent there for people who are companies who are politically connected with their no big contracts. We look at the collapse of Iraq and we understand that the destruction of that nation came about when buildings collapsed. The original lie was not the Iraq lie. The original lie was the buildings collapsing. And now we have people who are pushing back against that in New York. And I want to play this clip real quickly here. Go ahead and play that clip, guys.
It was almost as if it were a planned implosion. It just pancaked.
Well, pancaking almost like a precision implosion.
It's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before.
It's Building 7.
The building was
it wasn't hit.
Destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
All non-essential personnel move away from that collapse.
Okay, now that's I brought that up because there's a new measure on the New York City ballot that would force a probe of World Trade Center Building 7, which was never hit. And they talk about conspiracy theorists. Well, they're actually skeptics and investigators. They've collected 53,000 signatures to get that on the ballot. And we're going to talk about that when we come back. Why is it that they don't want to investigate it if they said it was something that happened because of structural defects? Wouldn't they want to know what those structural defects were? Stay with us. We're going to be right back.
We now take you live to the Central Texas Command Center in the heart of the resistance. It's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host for this Friday, June 27th, 2014. As I mentioned in the last segment, Paul Joseph Watson is going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour. He has some very good news again. Yesterday, he had we talked about an article that he found where a former CIA agent was talking about the hope that he had that we were going to have a peaceful revolution that would result in greater freedom, not a violent revolution that's going to result in a totalitarian state. Today we have some very good news on another front about a sheriff who actually stood up for people's constitutional rights in a big way. So he's going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour. We also have reports coming from the border. We're going to be joined by Rob Dew and Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs, who are at in El Paso, looking at the border situation there. And they have interviewed one of the Border Patrol agents. Actually, he's with the National Border Patrol Union. I think he's vice president of that union in El Paso. He gave them an exclusive interview that's up on Infowars.com right now, and he was talking about how dangerous it is that the cartels are using de facto amnesty to smuggle whatever they want to into the United States. That's right, they're putting in whatever they want to and whoever they want to. And as I was just pointing out in the last segment, we need to understand where this came from. We need to understand that this actually started not just with Obama. This is something that goes back 20 years, the beginning of NAFTA. And as General Petraeus pointed out last week, this is what comes after America. We have NAFTA. This is the fall, the collapse of America, and the rise of NAFTA. And this goes through multiple administrations. Started with the Clintons, who got it passed, and went through Bush, now being activated by Obama. And I think a couple of stories that are on Drudge Report right now from Infowars.com perfectly illustrates this policy. We've got an abandoned Walmart that is considered as feds explore immigrant shelter options. And that's a story by Don Salazar that's up on Infowars right now. He says feds are looking 1,500 miles inland to warehouse these people with a leaky roof in a building of Walmart. Now, Walmart is a vital company. They're doing great everywhere. They're some of the richest people in the world, or the Walmart family. And yet, here is an area where this is a symbol of economic collapse. So what are they doing? They're bringing the people that are going to bring about and accelerate that economic collapse. This is a Cloward and Piven strategy to rapidly expand the welfare state, to bring the economy down, to burden it with this type of expense. This is something that was gamed out 50 years ago by these two guys, Cloward and Piven. So we see that happening in New York as they're busing in the, transporting them 1,500 miles into a Walmart that is literally collapsing. And then at the same time, we have this article that was from yesterday. Paul Joseph Watson has virtually crime-free county in Florida gets an MRAP armored vehicle. And of course, these MRAPs, these are resistant to mines. These are military vehicles. He's got a picture. This is a gigantic vehicle. We got two guys standing here. The hood of the car is taller than these two guys, if you don't see that picture there. It is absolutely amazing. Now, this is an area. This is a little town called Walton, Florida. I mean, it sounds like the TV show from the 70s, The Waltons. Essentially, no crime. But that's okay, because war is coming to America. Homeland Security is making sure of it. The same people that are collapsing the economy, symbolized by this dilapidated Walmart and this demographic surge, they are also arming people in the interior to fight whatever and whoever they're letting in the borders. At the same time, they continue the harassment of Americans within the United States at the airports, in order to protect us from these same type of people, against drug dealers, against terrorists who might come in through the airports. Well, they're letting them in at the border. And it's the same organization. It's Homeland Security that is doing both of these. And of course, we had the article yesterday where the guy said, well, you may not like the fact that we've got a SWAT team and all these atrocities that are occurring from the SWAT teams. Now, 80,000 incidents of this a year where people are attacked by SWAT teams. And of course, the one that's about a month old, where they threw a flashbang grenade into the crib of an 18-month-old child, and that child is still struggling for his life. He says, you may not like that, But you're not going to be complaining about that when ISIS comes home. How's ISIS going to get into the country? Well, they've opened up the borders, haven't they? And they're putting in MRAP vehicles in small towns that have had no crime. A lot of people are talking after the Iraq War, is what we're seeing happening in Iraq. They're talking about the lies that began all of that, the lies from the Bush administration. But the collapse of Iraq that was preceded by lies was also preceded by another lie. And that lie was the same lie they used to create Homeland Security. And of course, that lie was 9/11. That was the collapse of Building 7. And as I was pointing out just before the break, there is now a measure that they're trying to get on the ballot in New York City. They've collected 53,000 signatures. And, of course, the way they report this in Ross Story, they say conspiracy theorists. They love to use that word all the time. Well, they're skeptics. They don't believe that this third building that wasn't hit by anything just fell down all by itself, especially when we have recordings of the guy who owned the building saying, pull it. Which is the phrase that they use for building demolition. So they got 53,000 people that want to see this measure put on the ballot. What is the measure? The measure wants voters to decide whether New York City's Department of Buildings should investigate the collapse of any building taller than 20 stories, going back to September 11th, 2001. This is from the New York Coalition for Accountability Now. Now, the interesting thing is, in the article, they say, well, you know, this has all been investigated by NIST, by the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and they found in 2008 that it just collapsed as a result of fires. Well, if you really believe that, wouldn't you want to investigate it instead of shutting it down? Wouldn't you really want to have a thorough investigation? Wouldn't you want to know why those little bit, how did it catch fire to that degree? We've seen skyscrapers burning for days that are steel skyscrapers that did not come down. So let's have a little bit of a discussion about that. But what is going on now is the product of that lie. After they have taken down Iraq with lies, they've destroyed that country, they've cost more soldiers' lives in Iraq have been lost than died in 9/11. Who knows how many Iraqis have died in that country? That country is being destroyed, has been destroyed. Now they're bringing about the collapse of America. And it's the institution that was created as an answer to their false flag at 9/11. Just look at the headlines from the Drudge Report today. Pelosi is going to greet new arrivals at the border. She's very happy with that. And of course, now the First Lady of Honduras is coming to tour immigration shelters in Texas. Do you get the idea that this is NAFTA, that this is not America anymore, that they've all agreed that this is just fine? We've got mothers telling people, get across and you stay. Your children can go to school. And, of course, the New York City is wanting these immigrants. They can't get enough of this voting block in New York because they want to have total control there. They're going to issue ID cards. They're setting up public defender's office to fight deportations, even though most of these people are not going to show up to their trials. They've got a backlog of, somebody reported yesterday, 360,000. And, of course, that's going to take years to go through that backlog, even if they show up. And, of course, we see immigration activists are going to the White House. They're concerned about harsh anti-immigrant rhetoric, it says. They think that this is an excuse not to act on immigration reform. Well, you know, let's channel Harry Reid and Hillary Clinton. What difference does it make? What difference does immigration reform make? I mean, is it going to make, if they reform the immigration laws, will Obama obey them now? If they reform the immigration laws, will Homeland Security obey them? You know, will the illegal immigrants obey the new immigration laws? They're not obeying the laws now. Why would we bother to reform them? Reforming the immigration laws is just code word for amnesty. They want to increase the welfare state. They want to change the demographics of this country. They want to bring in the youngest people that they can so that they will become indebted to the United States government. So they will do whatever the U.S. government wants. When you talk about bringing in the UN to establish martial law in the United States, you don't need to bring in foreign troops. If you can open up the borders and bring in young people from Central and South America. This is a tactic that all dictators have always known. You get the children at an early age and they're theirs for life. Hitler said that about the Hitler Youth. This is something that goes all the way back to Plato's Republic. Plato's Republic, he said, well, we're going to have a society that essentially has three levels. We're going to have the rulers, we're going to have the guardians, we're going to have everybody else. And we are going to make sure that no one knows who their mothers and fathers are. Their only loyalty is going to be to the state. So we are going to make sure that that they're removed from their parents, that we have these wild orgies. We sexualize the culture in the sense that no one knows who their children are. They're raised by the state, and they have no loyalties to their family. Because when you have loyalties to your family, when you have a cultural background there, that checks what the government can do. They don't want to see that. Now, and of course, the White House press secretary said just yesterday that they're not going to wait around and sit around and wait for Congress to write new laws. Of course they're not. They really don't care what those laws would be in the first place. And we also got some news about the police state. We've got Keith Alexander has now made the jump to highly paid consultant. You know, it's not just Hillary Clinton that gets the big bucks when she speaks. He is now offering himself out. First, he put himself out for $1 million a month as a consultant. Now he's putting himself out as $600,000. You're getting a discount. That's a pretty hefty discount. It's about a 40% discount. This is a guy who is, of course, was just recently at Bilderberg, talking to those guys there. And actually, he had gone to Bilderberg in 2012, speaking privately with all these people while he was still head of the NSA. And Alan Grayson, a congressman, has called him out, and he says, well, if he's got anything useful to offer at that price, maybe he's peddling national security secrets. Because having the Snowden leaks happen on your watch isn't much of a resume builder. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight. I'm going to be joining the next segment with Paul Joseph Watson, and we have some optimistic news there. But before we get to that, let's give you the bad news here. Oregon is going to be celebrating Independence Day with a no-refusal blood checkpoint. They're renaming the 4th of July weekend the no-refusal weekend. So watch out if you're in Oregon. This is a story from Steve Watson that's up on Infowars.com. Here's their clip.
In the past, Eugene police officer Ryan Stone says if someone was pulled over under the suspicion of driving while intoxicated, one could refuse a breath test, but would face fines and a year-long suspension of their license. Under no refusal, Stone says police will be able to file for a search warrant through an on-call judge and draw blood at the station.
The only difference now is that we have a better tool available to us for when that happens to follow it up and still obtain the evidence that we're looking for to successfully prosecute.
But not everyone is comfortable with this new practice, which for now will only happen on July 4th.
If you're doing something wrong, you should be penalized for it. But if you're not doing anything wrong, then it's an infringement.
That's intense. That's intense. I mean, it's definitely invasive, more so invasive even than just like breathing, you know, like giving a breathalyzer.
Oregon's ACLU executive director Dave Fidanke says this has long been a practice police have been allowed to do but have rarely done. He says as long as they apply for a warrant, it legally won't infringe on anyone's rights.
Going that one step further and getting a warrant for a blood draw, if they have probable cause and approval of the judge, that's the right way to go about it, in our view.
Yeah, there you go. That's the ACLU coming in and saying, hey, that's fine. You just get on the phone and you tell the judge and he rubber stamps whatever you tell him. I have a problem with that. We've had numerous examples of people having blood drawn from them across the country, finding that they were completely sober. So this whole thing about pulling people over, and they've redefined what drunk driving is to the point where I think a lot of people who really are dangerously drunk, who are chronic repeaters, are getting off because so many people understand that they've lowered so many times the definition of what a drunk driver is. That they're giving these people a pass on this. I've seen it myself when I was in traffic court for other things. I've seen people getting a pass on it just going before the judge. So this is a very dangerous thing. This is how our rights disappear. We're going to have Paul Joseph Watson on in the next segment talking about a police officer who actually stands up for people's rights. But before we get to that, while we're on cars – I talked yesterday about the coming computer-controlled cars, computer-driven cars that will really be controlled by the government. They will control when and where you can go, keeping certain areas off limits to you. And let's think about how that's going to be sold to us. One of the ways it's going to be sold to us is it's going to protect us from these dangerous drivers. And certainly, we're more than willing to give up our freedom and our rights to have checkpoints where they stop and inspect you on the road as you're going without any probable cause. It's not like you're weaving across the road. These are checkpoints where they stop people. And we say, that's fine. We'll do that for safety. Well, what they're doing is they're offering these computer-driven cars out there. Google is telling people it's going to reduce the number of deaths and accidents by 90%. It's like, really? Will it? They're going to put you in these cars with no steering and no brakes, completely under computer control. Well, how is that working out for us now? Well, they tell us that there's so many systems that are already in our cars. We have a lot of systems that are operating automatically, anti-lock brakes or airbags, for example. And now we have a story from Reuters, an exclusive airbag accident and a lawsuit led to the GM Cruise recall. An accident that left a Georgia woman blind in one eye and a subsequent lawsuit led to General Motors' recall of about 33,000 Chevy Cruises in North America for potentially defective airbags. So are we going to hear about that when the computer crashes, literally crashes your car, when you get the blue screen of death, or it drives you, the navigation software starts driving you in circles or drives you into a lake? Of course, you're not going to hear about that. That's going to be covered up, but they will use that as leverage to get you into a car, to make you helpless, to make you dependent, to keep you controlled, to control the transportation nodes. And we see this article that's up on Infowars.com about artificial intelligence. And of course, remember that this is really, there's also an artificial intelligence aspect to these quote unquote self-driving cars. They're not self-driving cars. Self-driving cars are what you have today when you drive yourself. These are going to be computer-driven, government-controlled cars. And of course, when they're in a situation where they have a potential accident, they're already talking about the kind of ethical trade-offs that these AI units within your cars are going to have to make. Are they going to, if a pedestrian pushing a baby carriage is crossing in front of you, is it going to swerve you into a truck because there's only one person in your car? Are you going to give that kind of control to your computer? Are we going to have engineers who start looking at ethics? Engineers who aren't going to make killer robots? And that's what this guy confronted the people at Google about, because, of course, Google now owns all the big DARPA robot projects. We'll be right back with Paul Joseph Watson and some good news. Stay with us.
Waging war on corruption, it's Alex Jones.
It's the time of the season.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight on this Friday, June 27th, 2014. Paul Joseph Watson is going to be joining us in just a moment from the UK. But before we go to him, I want to tell you that this hour of the Alex Jones Show is brought to you by our products at InfoWarsLife.com. Fluoride Shield is up for a 20% off special right now. You go to InfoWars Life, you'll find an exclusive blend and the Fluoride Shield of key herbs and ingredients specifically infused with a formula to help support the elimination of toxic forms of fluoride and other dangerous compounds like mercury, chlorine, and bromine from within the body. For years, InfoWars has been fighting to remove forms of fluoride from the water supply. With a lot of support from around the world, there have been victories in many countries around the U.S. Even the removal of sodium fluoride as far away as Germany, the Netherlands, and other nations. But while we may not be able to remove toxic fluorides from the global water supply just yet, we can actively make the decision to remove it from our bodies. You may even have a water filter at home to help remove toxic substances from the water, but you may not yet actively be working to remove these toxic substances from your body. So again, that's a 25% off special at InfoWarsLife.com. 25% off of Fluoride Shield. You know, when I was in Copenhagen, Paul, I was talking to a fellow there, and he said he's trying to wake up people to what's going on. And when he tells them that in the U.S. they're putting fluoride in the water, he said they don't believe him. They call him a conspiracy theorist. They don't put it in the water in Copenhagen and or Denmark, and they don't believe that anybody would do that to us here in the U.S. But you know, even if you filter your water at home, you're still going to be getting it when you go out to eat, or, you know, in a lot of the products that you buy, you're still going to be getting fluoride. So that fluoride shield and that special is something that's very valuable for people. We have an article up here from Paul Joseph Watson that is a very positive article, and I want to play this clip before we go to Paul and then get his comments on that. Let's run with that clip.
That's fine.
I'm Staff Sergeant Guthrie from the Lance County Sheriff's Office.
Nice to meet you, sir.
Nice to meet you. Can you tell me what's going on?
I was just taking pictures of F-16, the static display and stuff like that. I guess they don't like it very much. So.
I understand. They need to go back and read the Constitution, I believe.
Thank you. Good deal.
Not a problem. I'm not angry with you, not upset with you.
All right.
And you're not doing anything illegal as far as I'm concerned.
That's the sheriff talking.
You know, they get a little excited. Like I said, you're on a public access area. You could have a telephone in the hands. You could go anywhere in there. It doesn't matter.
Right.
You're not violating any law. You're not violating the Constitution. You're not violating anything
else. Okay. God bless you, Sergeant.
Hey, man, no problem.
Thank you.
Like I say, I do...
How do you guys stand these bugs out here?
It's South Georgia. We get used to it.
Goodness gracious.
42 years worth, and I get used to it. And this older fella coming down here, he's not with you, is he?
He's my friend, yes.
Oh, is he?
Okay. Uh-huh.
Are y'all from around here?
See, I'm not going to answer.
Okay, that's good. So, Paul, set that up for us. Kind of give us a context of what was going on immediately before that.
Yeah, this is a video put out by the people from Photography Is Not a Crime, which is obviously a website. We featured their work before that documents cases where people are harassed for taking footage on their cell phones and so forth in numerous different areas of the country. So they got reports that down in Georgia, outside Moody Air Force Base, people were being harassed by the feds and the police for taking images on their cell phones. So they went down there to conduct what they called a First Amendment test. They arrived outside Moody Air Force Base on public property, obviously, began filming a nearby railroad track, and within 3 minutes, FPS, Federal Protective Service, which of course is a division of the Department of Homeland Security, officers came out, started harassing them, started radioing for backup because they refused to provide any information. And so the individual in that clip, Jeff Gray, basically asked if he was being detained. The FPS had nothing to detain him on. He wasn't committing any crime. So they let him go immediately, but then they followed him in the car. They called for backup, which is when this sheriff's deputy arrived, Sergeant Guthrie, of the Lowndes County Sheriff's Office. And basically, obviously, the feds expected him to harass Jeff Gray to an even greater extent. But as you heard in the clip, he basically says that the feds need to go back and read the Constitution because mm-hmm. it's not illegal to take pictures from public property. He says, I'm not angry at you. I'm not upset at you. You're not doing anything illegal. So again, it's another one of these cases where, and we've had them in the past with Sheriff Lennick at Albany Airport for the TSA protest, not really a protest. They were just handing out flyers where he defended their First Amendment rights in the face of airport officials who were trying to harass them. So it's another case of a cop respecting constitutional rights, which is why I kind of tongue-in-cheek called the article shock video, because we're bathed in these police brutality videos from day to day, and it's very rare that we see something like this.
Yeah, and, you know, I think this particular incident really highlights the fact that these unconstitutional actions are really being driven by the feds. It's really being driven by Homeland Security. They're the ones who are really inciting local law enforcement, trying to get them to be more aggressive, to consider that they're working in some kind of a military operation where we are, quote unquote, the civilians, or maybe even the counterinsurgency, and they're the good guys. And they're fostering this martial law attitude and all points, and yet we still see that there are some good people in local law enforcement. It seems like, too, it typically is around sheriff's offices. I think that has something to do with the fact that the sheriffs are elected, the police chiefs are not. And I think it has something to do with just that little bit of accountability to the public. I think that makes a difference. But there are local police officers, local law enforcement, who are pushing back against this false narrative. And I thought it was interesting that the Staff Sergeant Guthrie there that was in the video said, yeah, I watch that stuff all the time on YouTube where people are having their First Amendment rights violated.
Well, that's exactly the point, because, you know, it's refreshing to see this, because it suggests that rather than inoculating everyone against being shocked by police brutality, the prevalence of these police abuse videos on the internet is actually serving to educate active police officers in understanding how important it is to uphold these constitutional rights. So the more cops that see these kind of videos, as you saw in the clip, Sergeant Guthrie says, yeah, I watch that stuff on YouTube all the time, the more they will realize that oppressing the First Amendment wrong is wrong, that shooting people's dogs is wrong, and the less incidents we're going to see like this in the future. So, you know, I was quite cynical beforehand, thinking that this overwhelming amount of police brutality that spreads on social media is merely acclimating people to accept it as normal. But in this case, we see that the sheriff's deputy has seen those videos. He's upholding his oath to protect the Constitution, to protect people's rights. And so that has had a positive effect. So that's the really positive thing that I take out of this, is that we are actually educating the most important people in this issue, which is the police officers themselves, to respect constitutional rights, specifically in this case, as they apply to the First Amendment.
You know, as he's saying that he sees this stuff all the time, and you point out he watches these videos, and his response is not to join in with the gang activity that a lot of these officers are being encouraged to do by Homeland Security, but his response is to push back against that. I think as we see this escalating and being escalated by Homeland Security out of the federal government, we're going to see the wheat separating from the chaff, and clearly that staff sergeant is one of the wheat and not the chaff. Now, there's another article that's up today on Infowars.com that you wrote, Paul, about combat troops being sent back to Iraq. A veteran claims that his son was told his unit is being deployed in February of 2015. Now, this is coming right on the heels of more revelations that the Pentagon is going to send 500 troops to Iraq. You know, it was just last week that he said he was going to send about 300. Now, that's nearly doubled. Now, we see this article that you put up where this veteran is saying that his son's being told that he's going to be sent back to Iraq in February.
Well, that's right. Of course, last week, Obama came out and said that no U.S. troops would be sent back to Iraq. The day after, he announced that 300 special operations troops would be sent as advisors. Mm-hmm. Now, with this whole ISIS threat being propped up, being generated, the fear-mongering being whipped up, of course, we know that the U.S. actually trained some of these ISIS terrorists back in 2012 at a secret base in Jordan. That's on the record. We've carried reports about that. So in supporting these jihadists in Syria, some of whom are aligned with ISIS, the Obama administration opened the door for them to then traverse into Iraq. Of course, they've now took control of major cities, major strategic outlets in Iraq. So we received this email, and since this article went up, I've received more. The first email said, we are being lied to about Iraq. This is from a U.S. Navy veteran talking about his son. My son is being trained right now and will be deployed to Iraq in February 2015. He's been told by the U.S. Army that his unit will be sent for combat. Then I received another email just before we went on air about 15 minutes ago. A family friend who is a Marine currently stationed at Camp Lejeune, I think that's how you pronounce it,
yes,
is told by his gunnery sergeant they will be deployed to Iraq. The Marine stated that after they finish training at Lejeune, they will be sent to 29 Palms for desert warfare training, then to Camp Pendleton. From there, they will be stationed on an amphibious assault ship until deployment to Qatar and ultimately Iraq. So now we're getting more than just the initial email from these veterans whose sons are being told that their combat units will be sent to Iraq. The timing, of course, is somewhat in the future. That probably tells you that they're preparing for a much greater operation to try and take back those key Iraqi cities from the very insurgents that the Obama administration helped in the first place by supporting these jihadists in Syria.
Yeah, and of course, Yahoo News is reporting today that Obama is seeking $500 million, that's $500 million, from Congress to help, quote-unquote, moderate Syrian rebels. We know that all last year they were trying to do everything they could to start a war in Syria, and we were told years ago by Wesley Clark that they had a plan. They were going to go from this this state in the Middle East to that one, to that one, to that one. And it was just like he said, the same sequence. And yet, as we push, the good news is that as we push back on their false flag attacks to try to get a war started in Syria, saying that there's a humanitarian crisis there because of sarin gas and the exposure that sarin gas possibly came from Saudi Arabia, but it certainly didn't look like the militarized or weaponized stuff that the Syrian forces would have. There were leaked reports that came out of the U.S. government that pushed back, the people within the U.S. government pushing back against the Obama administration, the people in that who were pushing for war. So we had a lot of pushback as the alternative media, as InfoWars and others stood up and exposed this. People within the government leaked information to show that this was a false flag. We had congressmen and former congressmen like Dennis Kucinich. We had Ted Cruz and others talking about us not being the Air Force for Al-Qaeda in Syria. And yet, Obama is not giving up on that either. Now he's going to send $500 million to train these good Al-Qaeda that are in Syria.
Well, yeah, and he's talking about airstrikes in Syria as well. So the big myth, of course, is that there are any moderate rebels to begin with.
Right.
There were at the start of the conflict, the kind of political bloc. But the moderate rebels, most of them defected to the terrorist organizations like Jabhat al-Nusra. We documented that over the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the so-called moderate FSA commander plucking the internal organ out of his victim and eating it on camera, that's what they categorize as moderate, then God forbid what the extremists are up to. So again, the money, the arms are going to these so-called moderate groups who then pledge allegiance publicly to the terrorists, defect to the terrorists, and even the ones who don't, as The Guardian reported, they're being commanded, they're being taught how to carry out suicide attacks, terrorist attacks, by the extremist faction. So you cannot differentiate between the moderates and the extremists when the two go hand in hand. They're allied with each other. And that's how ISIS has been allowed to grow, because they've swallowed up more and more of the so-called moderates, radicalized them. Now they're moving on. They've moved to Iraq. They've seized Mosul, a key town in Iraq. And now it's being used again to create the justification to send US troops back into Iraq, because, you know, the permanent military bases that they set up there after the 2003 invasion, the US government, they were never really meant to be scaled back. That's why you see now Cheney and all these neocons in the media talking about how we now need to go back in, because they never planned to pull out in the first place. This was always going to be a decades-long occupation. So now they've got the convenient excuse of ISIS terrorizing the entire country. As a result of their blowback policy, they trained some of them in Jordan in 2012, as I said before. And now Obama's saying that he doesn't need to get approval from Congress to send US troops back into Iraq indefinitely, just as he did before the attack on Libya. Totally disregarded Congress, said he didn't need any authorization. And we now see that same process unfolding again. And as I said, receiving numerous emails now from veterans who say their sons are being told they will be deployed to Iraq within the next 6 to 8 months.
You know, that's a recurring theme, isn't it, that Obama says he doesn't need congressional authorization or legal authorization to do anything. I mean, this, whether it's the borders, whether it's the war in Iraq, whether it's the NDAA, you know, he gives himself legal authorization to have people detained indefinitely in America. And he says, don't worry, I'm not going to use that. Well, we're kind of worried because he doesn't, in most cases, doesn't even need to have legal authorization. He claims to do whatever he wishes. So when he gives himself legal authorization to do something like the NDAA, I think people get very worried about that. But of course, Paul, your point that they never planned on getting out of there, I think is well taken. I mean, why would you build a nearly billion-dollar embassy fortress right there in the middle of Baghdad and put 5,000 people there if you really weren't planning on staying there for a long time? And they're saying that they're going to stay in Afghanistan for a couple of more decades. They're upfront about that.
Exactly. I mean, read PNAC. Iraq and Afghanistan were just the first two on the chopping block. Mm-hmm. So this is about the ingrained occupation of the Middle East. It's about controlling that key region. And this is merely the latest excuse which they're using in which to go in. And people expect troops to be deployed to Iraq. I mean, there was a Fox News poll this week. 70% of Americans believe that U.S. troops will be sent back to Iraq. So with this media narrative of ISIS being the big threat, yesterday we talked about, you know, ISIS are going to invade the U.S. and then everybody will be happy about how the police are militarized. They've really conditioned people to accept this new threat, which they created in order to grease the skids for both domestic repression and geopolitical occupation.
You know, I guess as I look at this, it's just becoming so obviously transparent. When you look at what ISIS is, it's, you know, they want an integrated Syria and Iraq. And so at the same time, he's saying we have to escalate and reoccupy Iraq and go back in and fight because ISIS is there. He's also funding those same rebels inside Syria and going to send them $500 million. I mean, how is it that he can get away with this in the mainstream media? Of course, they're controlled. They're Mockingbird Press, and they do whatever the government wants them to do. But it's just amazing to me how blatant the lies are now. This isn't like it happened and then the other part of it happened a few years down the road and people can't put the pieces together. They're happening simultaneously. We're going to be right back after the break talking to Paul Joseph Watson, and we're also going to talk about negative interest rates in Europe. And we told you where that was headed. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight in Austin. I'm joined with Paul Joseph Watson from the UK, and we've just been talking about the gradual sliding, metastasizing mission creep, I guess you could say, of re-escalating the war in Iraq. We see that Obama is going to be sending $500 million to Syria, and of course, ISIS is trying to integrate Iraq and Syria. And we see also mission creep in terms of the number of soldiers. At first, there were not going to be any. Then we heard there were going to be 300 soldiers sent, then 500. And now Watson has an article up on Infowars.com. He's been sent information by people who have family in the military or who are in the military saying that they're being told that their entire units are being trained for deployment. One of them was specifically saying in February. So this is looks like they're going to start that up again. It looks like, Paul, that he is making other people's enemies his enemies. You know, when we interviewed the author of The Color Purple, she said she spoke at his inauguration. One of the things she said was, don't make other people's enemies yours. It looks like he's doing that in spades, isn't he?
Well, exactly. I mean, we've documented it from the start. They always planned this humanitarian intervention of Syria based on a chemical weapons attack. You remember at the end of August, it seemed almost inevitable that that would be used to go in. Thankfully, it was derailed at the last minute, as he said earlier, from people on the inside, actually. I don't think it was completely public pressure. Obviously, the world was dead set against it, but it seemed like people inside the US military kind of derailed that inevitable, it seemed, attack on Syria. But now he's trying to go back in with a different justification by pumping up this fear-mongering about ISIS, which, again, the US government trained some of those terrorists in Jordan back in 2012.
Now, you know, we just had that story yesterday. You and I talked a little bit about where this law enforcement training agency tweeted out, you know, hey, people were upset that SWAT teams threw a flashbang grenade into the crib of an 18-month-old and critically injured him, still struggling for life. But hey, they're going to have a different story when ISIS comes home. Well, what's your take on this article that's up on Infowars.com today? This is an interview that Rob Dew and Joe Biggs and Kit Daniels have put up on Infowars with a Border Patrol Union Vice President out in El Paso, saying that they're using this these collapsed borders to smuggle in whatever they want and whoever they want.
Well, I mean, it's like the story we had last week, wasn't it, where they were bussing them in. There's another story, actually, on prisonplanet.com. All of the net jobs gains in the U.S. since 2000 have gone to immigrants.
Yeah.
Since 2000, all of the net jobs added by the U.S. economy have gone to immigrants. So whereas the U.S. population has lost jobs domestically, the ones the new jobs created can all be accounted for by the influx of these millions of immigrants. So again, I mean, it's shocking. You had the story today about a Mexican military helicopter attacking U.S. Border Patrol, actually flying into the U.S. They said, of course, it was an accident. They apologized for it. Right. They were chasing drug dealers. So it's only escalating, isn't it?
Yeah. And when he's talking about they can get whoever and whatever they want, and he says, we don't know what or who is coming in, and we won't know until something bad happens. I'm reminded of this article that we had out of the Australian. I've got a reference here. Back in December, this last December, here's the headlines. Deadly radioactive medical material stolen in Mexico, and it sparks terror fears. I mean, we've got a wide open border there. And they're using, according to this interview that we're going to have them on later in the program. We're going to have Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs, who did the interview. We're going to be talking to him in the third hour, and he's going to give us a little bit more information, and you aren't going to believe what else this guy told them that's with the Border Patrol Union down there in El Paso. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to have Dr. Peter Bregan, a psychiatrist, and he's going to talk to us about SSRI drugs and their role in mass murders. Thank you so much, Paul Joseph Watson from the UK. Thank you.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight. I'm going to be joined in the next segment by Dr. Peter Bregan, and he's someone who's spoken out many times on the effects of SSRI drugs as that being the major common link in all of these mass shootings and suicides. It's why we call them murder pills here. We're also going to be talking to him about the effects of the potential for abuse with the brain project that Obama is coming up with the research that DARPA is doing, where they say that they want to selectively take out memories of people. That ought to raise everybody's fears. Now, of course, they say they're doing it for a good cause. They're going to use that to get rid of PTSD in veterans. But we've heard that before. We heard that after World War II. They were giving veterans lobotomies en masse in the 1950s. There was a massive exposure of that by the Wall Street Journal. It was also carried by PBS. I think it was Frontline that carried it. But there was a massive exposure of the atrocities that were committed on veterans by the VA in the name of helping them with PTSD, called lobotomies. And Dr. Bregan has been very much involved with that. He fought against the reinstitution of lobotomies as people were trying to bring that back in the 1970s. So I want to get his take on this new high-tech lobotomy and the potential for abuse, not only against veterans, but against the population in general. We were talking in the last segment to Paul Joseph Watson from the UK about this article that has been posted up on Infowars.com, where Border Patrol Vice President says cartels are using de facto amnesty to smuggle whatever they want and whoever they want into the United States. What is that going to bring into the United States? How is our government going to react to that? Of course, we see that the same organization, Homeland Security, that has opened up the borders, completely allowing anyone and anything to come in, as he points out, we see how, at the same time, they're militarizing towns in Florida, small towns, where there's been no crime, and yet they're giving them massive counterinsurgency equipment. They've been doing this for quite some time. They've been storing up ammunition for quite some time. It's almost like they were planning this. It's almost like they knew this was coming along. And of course, in this interview, and we're going to be talking to Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs about that, and there's some additional information that's not in this article that's going to be coming up. We're going to talk to him in the third hour from El Paso. He's there at the border. But in this interview that's up there now, this Border Patrol agent says that, of course, the economic conditions and the crime conditions are horrible there in Central America. But he goes, that's been going on for more than 10 years. He says, so this invasion, to start suddenly happening, something else had to change. And what changed is the fact that we're engaging in this catch-and-release program, and the word has spread fast. And so that's exactly what we see happening. But of course, you know, Obama is now trying to step back a little bit as people are talking about how dangerous this is for the children. And of course, that's another aspect of it. It's not just the demographic surge. It's not just the Cloward and Piven surge, but it's also the fact that they're deliberately bringing in young children. I believe that has to do with Obama's idea that he wants some kind of a youth corps. He wants to give them a free education and in return turn them into foot soldiers for the state who are completely indoctrinated by the federal government, have no attachment to America or its traditions or even to their family. Their only attachment being to the federal government that they see as family, as mother, as father, as rich uncle. Listen to what he had to say about bringing the children in.
The problem is that under current law, once those kids come across the border, there's a system in which we're supposed to process them, take care of them, until we can send them back.
So is your message, don't come?
Oh, our message absolutely is don't send your children unaccompanied on trains or through a bunch of smugglers. That is our direct message to the families in Central America. Do not send your children to the borders. If they do make it, they'll get sent back. More importantly, they're not sending them back, though.
And do you notice how he prevaricated around the truth when Stephanopoulos said, is your message?
Man, when I get home from work, all Betty does is watch her reality TV and then she goes to sleep. I can take her on romantic dates, I get her flowers, you name it. She's just not the woman I married.
Oh, Ralph, that's just awful.
Does this seem familiar? Are the honeymoon days of your relationship long gone? If so, consider this. The abundance of chemical additives, pesticides, BPA containers, contaminated tap water, and other toxic substances found in our environment. Experts know our bodies are suffering and being thrown off balance, especially when it comes to your natural systems. Forget synthetic chemicals. Super Female Vitality brings forward key herbs specifically chosen for women's biology without the use of phony additives. Get your bottle of Super Female Vitality today at InfoWarsLife.com, InfoWarsStore.com, or call 1-888-253-3139. InfoWarsLife.com. Live life healthy.
A chemical spill contaminating the water supply in 9 West Virginia counties.
This year alone, over 300,000 people in West Virginia had their drinking water contaminated.
What are the health effects of having these drugs in our drinking water?
It's forced medical treatment without the consent of residents.
My friends, water filtration is one of the most basic actions you can take to protect you and your family from the harmful toxins and heavy metals in your tap water.
On average, the county says it sprays with glyphosate at least once a week.
Few filters cut out the glyphosate that is found in water supply worldwide. Remove pesticides, herbicides, chloramines, hydrofluorosilicic acid, sodium hexafluorosilicate.
Fluoride, it is in tea, it's in coffee, it's in water, it's in bread, it's in toothpaste.
It is our responsibility to protect our families. The establishment's not going to do it. It's time to take action. It's time to filter our water. Visit InfoWarsStore.com and use promo code WATER to get 10% off their entire family of incredible products. Or call toll free 888-253-3139. From the water table to our soils to the atmosphere itself, our world is becoming more and more toxic each and every day. But it's not just the air outside that's toxic. Indoor air has been shown to have 2 to 5 times higher concentrations of pollutants than even outdoor air. And most Americans spend 90% of their time inside using toxic chemicals within their homes. There are more than 42 million smokers in the United States. Well over 1,000 types of mold and mildew linked to numerous conditions. And don't forget the fact that 6 million Americans live with pets they're allergic to as well. When I began to research these statistics, it was clear to me it was time to start cleansing my lungs in order to combat the toxic environment that we cannot escape, but that we can fight back against. Made with organic and wild cultivated herbs and manufactured in the USA, the new InfoWars Life Lung Cleanse is here in a convenient spray bottle that can be brought with you throughout any toxic environment. Now available exclusively at InfoWarsLife.com or by calling toll-free 888-253-3139.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and I'm joined right now by Dr. Peter Bregan. Now, as an introduction, reading from his bio here, since 1964, he's been publishing peer-reviewed articles and medical books in his subspecialty of clinical psychopharmacology. This is someone who has clearly spoken out for a very long time, was at the forefront of telling people about the harmful, counterproductive effects of SSRI drugs, how it was driving people to suicide and to mass murder. And we have been trying to tell people for the longest time that the common link in all these mass shootings are the drugs. And yet the big pharmaceutical companies and the media that feed off of the big pharmaceutical companies, look at how much, how many of the commercials are paid for by big pharmaceutical companies. Of course, they're not going to bite the hand that feeds them. But we've been trying to tell people what's behind that. But I also wanted to talk to Dr. Breggin about lobotomies, high-tech lobotomies that DARPA is working on, because he's been someone who's been at the forefront of pushing back against that. And as we see veterans doing many, many tours in Afghanistan and Iraq, as we see now that that is starting to fire up again. We were just talking to Paul Joseph Watson about how we see this mission creep now in terms of it was first not going to be any troops sent back to Iraq. Now it's going to be 300. Now Obama's saying 500. Now we're getting emails from people saying their entire unit is being trained for deployment within the next few months going back to Iraq. So it looks as they're going to continue to escalate that, continue to keep Afghanistan going on for decades. And so we have a lot of veterans who are suffering from PTSD. And we understand that in the aftermath of World War II, the VA and was treating people with, vets who came back with PTSD, they were treating a lot of them with lobotomies. And now we see that DARPA says that they're going to be able to use brain chips to selectively remove memories. And of course, as you start reaching for something to make you wake up from this nightmare when you hear that the government is going to start messing with people's memories, implanting false memories, removing other memories, when that starts to scare you, they say, oh, don't worry, this is for PTSD. And of course, we heard that with lobotomies. And Dr. Breggin was very much a part of the fight in the 1970s in an international campaign to stop the resurgence of lobotomies. And so I wanted to ask him first about that. Dr. Breggin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, David. This could be a very important show. It's the first time that I'm going to be talking about DARPA. Thank you. Thanks to you. And I have just a huge amount of background on this. This isn't the first time that government agencies have funded what is essentially mind control. Mm-hmm. Back in the 1970s, the Justice Department and the National Institute of Mental Health, quite a combination, funded psychosurgery at Harvard, where they were implanting electrodes into the brains of people that were supposed to be patients but were experimental subjects. They were stimulating parts of the brain. They were obliterating parts of the brain by heating the electrodes. They had people walking around the ward being stimulated without their knowing it by remote control. Mm. And one of the heroes of DARPA is a fellow named Jose Delgado, who was sort of the godfather of these Harvard programs. And I conducted an international campaign that actually shut down the Harvard program. And I'm proud to say I actually drove Jose Delgado back to Spain back in the early 70s. So this is an old goal. Then we had the CIA. So we moved from the Justice Department and NIMH to the CIA, funding experiments in Canada with D.E. Cameron, who was a very famous psychiatrist. Even though a Canadian, he was at one point the president of our American Psychiatric Association. He had CIA funds to treat people when he was actually obliterating their memories with shock treatment, then using recorded devices to try to reprogram people and redevelop their personalities. Now, in both these projects, what they really succeeded in doing was destroying the brains of people and destroying their lives. Mm. The final, this to sum up with the final version of all of this that I got involved with was the Violence Initiative in 1994. My wife and I wrote a book about it called The War Against Children of Color. We found out that the federal government, starting with all of the health agencies, the Justice Department, and the Centers for Disease Control, that these organizations were getting were applying for huge federal funding as a group to go into America's inner cities to identify genetically and biochemically why little children in the inner cities would grow up to become violent. This was pure racism, and it was pure eugenics, which is the usual combination.
Yes.
And Ginger and I worked, you know, for several years to stop that program, too. So this is now a reincarnation on a somewhat more sophisticated level
yes.
of mind control, and the government's been at this for ages.
But, of course, we don't have to worry about it now because it's so high-tech. You know, it's like the way they sold the drone strikes, saying they were going to do surgical strikes, and yet we see entire wedding parties being taken out. I mean, it's still not a surgical strike, and if they say they're going to be able to go in and selectively mess with people's minds because they've now got some kind of brain chip, you know, a semiconductor that they can use as opposed to doing surgery, it is no less destructive. People need to understand that, you know, you can kill people from a bomb out of a B-52, or you can kill them from a Predator drone. You can destroy their minds with a lobotomy surgery, or you can destroy their minds with a high-tech brain chip. And you're talking about the minorities. We just recently had a report about a government agency funding research on premature babies, varying the amount of oxygen to them and giving some of them too much oxygen, making them blind, and some of them depriving them of oxygen to brain damage them. I mean, that came out, and that was being targeted. Most of the cases where they were talking to people were minority people. They came in, and they actually, Dr. Bregan, created an acronym called SUPPORT. And they told him, we're with the support group, you know, and they had this little acronym as cover. And these people thought they were just a support group. They were going to be coming in, holding their hands, offering them counseling and that sort of thing. When actually they were signing on, they were deceiving them into signing on to a situation where their child was going to be damaged by this deprivation of oxygen or too much oxygen.
Yeah, it's just an opportunistic. They go after the minorities, partly from racism, but partly it's just flat out opportunism. Let me quickly go down some of these DARPA programs. Can I do that for 60
go ahead.
Seconds here?
Definitely.
Well, first of all, DARPA is funded through Obama and through the military this time. Most of these other programs were through health agencies, the Justice Department, and so on. One project is to create a black box to implant in brains. Very much like the one in airplanes, that'll keep track of your brain function and then even be able to retrieve it after you've died to look at what happened to you.
They monitor all of our emails and all of our conversations. That's not enough for them. They have to keep a record and, I guess, store it out in Utah. They have to store it for the NSA, even what we think, I guess, right?
Yeah, my wife, Ginger, who works closely with me on these issues and on the was the heart and soul behind the Stopping the Violence Initiative against Black Children, was just pointing this out to me today. They want to start with our conversations, but really where they want to go is inside our heads.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So one of them is the black box. Another is interface between brains, where they want to be people to be able to communicate and influence each other's brains. Another is influencing brains, and they've been trying to do this with animals, animal brains influencing animal brains, the internet influencing animal brains. They've got another one about stimulating for lost memories. You mentioned the one where they can put in chips and then destroy the chips, which would destroy the person.
Yes.
And the one that I think is the most key, because this is where the drug companies are going to jump on. This is where all the money's really eventually going to go. And that's a project called Subnets. And that's, at this point, a $70 million DARPA project to use brain implants to identify mental disorders like depression, PTSD, addiction.
Yeah, there you go.
They're going to study what's wrong with brains and then fix the brains. This is subtle lobotomy. And you know, what we call mental illnesses are not physical in origin. A soldier who comes back full of guilt and shame and horror of war and has what's called post-traumatic stress disorder. It's not a disorder. It's just post-traumatic stress. Mm-hmm. It's what happens to a normal person with a normal brain when you put them through war.
Exactly.
So they redefine human experiences. Depression is loss of hope. It's profound sadness. It's a feeling of helplessness. All of these understandable human processes are not biological in origin. And when they go in there and tinker, what they're eventually going to do is just very crude control and mostly destruction.
Yes. And the other thing that concerns me is that if they did get a finer means of control, I think that their ultimate goal is to try to make people who absolutely have no conscience or remorse about what they will do, who will do anything that they're told, whether that's because they've got some kind of a brain chip in them that is forcing them to do it, or whether they've removed any guilt, any moral conscience that person might have. I think that's the thing that really scares me, because when we look at these experiments, whether you're talking about the Tuskegee experiments that everybody knows about, or some of these that are just recent and a lot of people don't understand about this preemies experiment on the premature babies, or just as I was coming to InfoWars, they had the EPA was experimenting on people feeding them diesel fumes. And this was done in an effort to try to up their regulations for fine particulate matter. They were selectively screening for people who had respiratory and heart issues because they wanted to increase the regulation of fine particulate matter. These are people who have no moral conscience, and I think they're trying to, ultimately, that's what they would like to see happen with others. We're going to be right back with Dr. Peter Breggin. We're talking about the history of mind control and lobotomies and how that's been abused. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and I'm joined with Dr. Peter Breggin. This is a man who has, for many years, warned about the negative effects, the unintended consequences of SSRI drugs, making the symptoms worse, being the major contributing factor to many suicides and mass murders. But this part of the program, we've been talking to him about something else that he's been involved in fighting, and that is lobotomies. And now we see that President Obama has this $100 million initiative, the Brain Initiative, that DARPA is pushing through. And, of course, just as they used this phony acronym of SUPPORT to try to deceive people who were the parents of premature babies into signing on to this program that was going to essentially deprive their premature babies of oxygen or give them too much oxygen, both of them having severe consequences, even death. They deceived them by coming up with this acronym called SUPPORT. Well, Obama's got his own acronym for this DARPA program. The BRAIN Initiative actually stands for Brain Research Through Advancing Innovative Neurotechnologies. And, of course, what this looks like to me when they're talking about changing people's memories, when they're talking about selectively removing memories, this looks like the very crude approach that they did after World War II to veterans with lobotomies. I was just talking to Dr. Breggin about that. Dr. Breggin, they want us to believe that they have something that is very advanced and precise surgically, electronically. Now we have high technology to take care of this. But as you're pointing out, this is just going to be more of the same, isn't it?
Yeah. Let me address for a minute just how complex and amazing and poorly understood the brain is.
Yes.
You know, the brain has perhaps 100 billion cells, nerve cells. Now, these are just the communicating cells, not all the superstructure. They may have up to 10,000 connections, each one. We're talking about trillions of connections going on in the brain. We have so little understanding of the brain, David, that there is no famous brain scientist. So you think about Newton or Einstein or Galileo, all the great names of the physical universe, there are none for the brain, because we don't understand how the brain works. We don't understand its operating system. We don't know how it creates language or thoughts or feelings. It's a very dark area. It's a mysterious area. It should be treated with the utmost respect, and we should avoid any kind of tampering inside the brain. The brain, each of our brains is probably more complicated than the entire physical universe, because life is so complicated. The universe doesn't speak. It doesn't think. It's simple compared to a human brain. And we need to back off and say, if we're going to do basic research, it has to be on the simplest, genuine neuroscientific level of how does a neuron work, how many connections does it have, what are the chemical influences on it. We can't just stumble into the brain like it's a china shop that we're indifferent toward, barge around breaking things. We won't succeed in what they want to do. They won't succeed in fine-tuning people's brains, but they will succeed in developing the ability to injure brains and probably to make people docile.
Yes.
Because the main effect is docility and apathy when you harm the brain.
Yes, absolutely. I think, and I don't know how you view this, but I look at this and I think, for them to come out and say that they're going to do it through DARPA, which is loosely tied to the defense aspect of it. Of course, they do a lot of things with robots that scare us as well. But when they say they're going to treat PTSD, I think they're just looking to use veterans as guinea pigs. And you're talking about bull in a china shop. I mean, they're going to put this chip in here and just experiment on these people in a real brute force kind of way.
Oh, absolutely. When I started the anti-psychosurgery campaign, they were doing psychosurgery at NIMH. They were doing psychosurgery at the VA. I stopped all of that. But they weren't trying to treat people.
No.
They were experimenting. They were trying to develop their sense of power and authority over human beings. It's an evil approach to human beings. It's an objectifying of our basic nature, which is very spiritual. And whether you believe in evolution or God or both, I mean, our brain has to do with our will. It has to do with our values. It has to do with who we are. And all they're going to be able to do, and they will be able to do this better, they will be able to make people more conforming and more docile.
Yes.
Lobotomy patients became totally docile. Modern-day electroshock patients are still fighting electroshock. After a few shocks, become docile and apathetic.
Stay with us. We've got to take a break. We're going to be right back with Dr. Peter Bregan.
The Alex Jones Show. Because there is a war on for your mind.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and I've been talking to Dr. Peter Bregan about DARPA's $100 million brain project. They say they're going to help veterans with PTSD. Dr. Bregan is someone who has fought against the brutalities of lobotomies that were performed on World War II veterans for the same justification, to help them with PTSD. So we've been talking about what's likely to come out of that. I want to continue that discussion with Dr. Bregan, but before we do, I want to tell you this hour of the Alex Jones Show is brought to you by My Patriot Supply. You know, the collapse of the border, the soaring meat prices, it's clear that there is no longer time to wait. You need to start getting prepared today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and check out their complete line of preparedness products. My Patriot Supply is the home of the Patriot Pantry line of emergency food storage. If you don't have food, you're no threat to the New World Order. They're counting on you to be ever-dependent slaves in their system of control, but you can fight back. You can establish independence for yourself and for your family by securing your own private supply of storable food. And there's no better way to prepare than this Patriot-owned company. Visit MyPatriotSupply.com/Alex for special offers to listeners of this broadcast. And for a limited time, they're offering additional discounts off their already low price. That website again is MyPatriotSupply.com/Alex. Now, Dr. Bregan, just before the break, you were talking about how crude this is, the lobotomies that they did, and how crude even their most sophisticated technological approaches are going to be with their latest technology because of the complexity of the human brain. And you said something that I thought was very important, that this is really, the real effect of this is going to be to destroy people's minds and at the very best to pacify them, to keep them from being a threat to them. I want people to go back and look at this this study, this project that came back, I think it was at the end of December. It's the Forgotten Soldiers. It's a report that the Wall Street Journal did. And in it, They're talking about how the Veterans Administration, quote, performed brain-altering operations on former servicemen that it diagnosed, and listen to this, depressives or psychotics or schizophrenics, and occasionally on people they identified as homosexuals. In the future, will that list include dissidents? Will it include people who don't agree with the government or the people find that they are political opposition? That's not beyond the realm of speculation. That has been done in totalitarian states. That's the most common diagnosis for get rid of somebody was with to say that they were mentally ill and lock them away in an institution. But I also wanted to tell them this. They need to go back and they need to read these stories because I think that's what really drives it home. We can talk in the abstract about what happens with lobotomies, but if they go back and read the case stories of these World War II veterans, one of these fellows, 90 years old, describing his experiences. When they see it personally, I think it'll have an effect on them. And just one last thing before I go back to you, Dr. Bregan. What they said here, that surgery left them, because many people don't understand, they've never known anybody with a lobotomy. Of course, if you've seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, that's centered on that. And of course, that was written by somebody who was part of a government experiment on mind control. That was a guy who was involved in the early experiments of LSD who wrote that novel. But the Wall Street Journal points out that the lobotomy surgery left these men little more than overgrown children unable to care for themselves. Many suffered seizures, amnesia, and loss of motor skills. And some died from the operation itself. So I encourage you to go and look at that if you're not familiar with the effects of that. And think about what's going on with that before you allow someone in your family or before you take that treatment yourself, before you think that DARPA's got some kind of a new magic pill for PTSD. Dr. Bregan.
The government has actually participated in this country, at least in one project, in using shock treatment to suppress political dissidents. I did a show with 60 Minutes, so we had, I think, three segments about black protesters during the 70s in the Navy who were subjected to shock treatment to control them and to stop them from protesting. And shock treatment will stop you from protesting. And shock has been used in our state hospitals. Years ago, whole wards would be given shock treatment to make them more docile, more controllable, make them line up at the, you know, on the food lines and do what they were told. If you think about the human brain, I mean, you mentioned a lot of the adverse effects of lobotomy, including some that are more physically obvious. But the fundamental effect of lobotomy is to rob humanity. Because if you think about the frontal lobes, you know, that's what makes us look different from our dogs and from chimpanzees is we've got this big bulging forehead. And that's the flower of human development. And so if you want to conceive of what lobotomy does, all you have to do is conceive of how you think of a human being. If you think of the human being in spiritual terms or as worshiping God, that's going to be knocked out, diminished, or destroyed. If you think of human beings, as I do, as sources of love and caring, that's going to be one of the very first things to go. If you think about people in terms of their judgment, their insight, their future planning, that's going to be injured. In fact, whenever anybody describes the effects of injuring the frontal lobes of the brain, which all of this research will do, it'll all be directed to some extent at frontal lobes. Whatever the person says the frontal lobes are doing is just a projection of what that person thinks human beings are, because it's the seat of our humanity, and that's what they're tampering with.
Yeah, that's very eloquently put. It's a very frightening prospect, especially when we remember, as we recounted in the earlier segments, the history of all these experiments, as you mentioned, using electroshock therapy to stop dissidents. We know that this is something that they're going to do. And as your wife pointed out, this black box project where they want to record what's going on in your mind, we know that they want to know and control everything about us. I want to move on to another topic that has been one that you've been on the forefront of fighting against, and that is the SSRI drugs and the what we call here murder pills. Could you talk to the audience about that and your concerns about that?
Well, I was the scientific expert for all of the combined Prozac suits back in the 1990s. So I literally got inside Eli Lilly and then later inside other drug companies. And I can tell you that they actively suppressed all the data they were getting on violence and suicide and on the ineffectiveness of the drug. For example, when Eli Lilly would get a report from a doctor saying that his patient had, even one of their own researchers, saying that a patient had committed suicide probably caused by the drug, they would change their own investigator's report to no drug effect or emotional instability. When all the reports of violence came out, they didn't research their own data to see about this. They formed a committee to counter it, and they met secretly. This is not a conspiracy. It's a fact. Mm-hmm. They met secretly in early morning hours with the FDA to avoid the press or anybody seeing Eli Lilly coming and going with the FDA to cover this up. Wow. The latest scientific research shows that if you take all the studies sent to the FDA for antidepressants, not just the cherry-picked ones, see, the company will do maybe six studies, seven studies, and then they'll cherry-pick two, and those will be the studies used to prove the drug is effective. Well, if you look at all the studies, latest research, the antidepressants don't work. They're ineffective. And then if you look at additional research, it's clear they cause violence and suicide, psychosis and mania. So we have tons of evidence that they don't work and tons of evidence that they are causing horrible mental aberrations by disrupting the function of the brain. And there's just no doubt about this.
And every time we have a mass shooting, we always know that there's going to eventually come out that the person was on some kind of SSRI drug. That seems to be the common thread in all these. They're coming from all different walks of life, different ages, different social conditions, and yet that seems to be the common thread.
Well, the way I've evaluated it is there are three common threads. One is nearly every single one has been through psychiatry, whether they're on a drug or not. Mm-hmm. Nearly everyone has been through psychiatry. That means beefing up psychiatry isn't going to save us from violence. Psychiatrists make people violent by humiliating them, which is the ultimate source emotionally of most violence, is feeling humiliated and impotent. So psychiatry makes people feel that way with the diagnoses, the drugs, the hospitals. So, and it doesn't identify violence because there's no particular ability to do that within psychiatry. So one thing is they've almost all of them been through psychiatry. Secondly, many of them, maybe not all, certainly not all, but many of them were actively taking psychiatric drugs at the time. And not just SSRIs, but also other kinds of antidepressants, benzodiazepines, which can disinhibit like alcohol, and stimulants, which can drive people over the edge. And the press has lied about this. I was a medical expert in several suits surrounding Columbine. And what I found was that Eric Harris, one of the two youngsters who committed this atrocity and then killed each other, Eric was taking an antidepressant for a whole year with increasing doses. He was taking Luvox, which is an SSRI, fluvoxamine is its technical name. Mm-hmm. And he had a blood level of this drug from the coroner's office and also reported to the FDA, and the blood level in his system at the time of the shooting. It was ironically called a therapeutic level of the drug Luvox. And then you get the major media, USA Today, for example, recently coming out with a story reviewing what happened at Columbine and saying we now know that Eric Harris wasn't taking psychiatric drugs at the time. Well, he was, and I can track through his record that he wasn't crazy before he was put on the drugs. He was put on them because he was an obsessive kid, and he gets progressively crazier and manic and psychotic, paranoid on the drugs. I sent the information to USA Today. I said, here's the FDA report. Here's how you can get you the autopsy report. He was on drugs. You need to correct this. It was in his system at the time of his death. Therapeutic level. They didn't even respond to me.
Not surprising. One of the things that really concerns me, and you've written about this as well, is in the aftermath of Sandy Hook, we saw people on both the left and the right saying it's psychiatric evaluations that we need more of to stop a repeat of this, and calling for background checks, calling for banning people from owning guns if they've had any connection whatsoever with the psychiatrist, or allowing the psychiatrist to essentially declare people without any kind of due process to declare them as being unfit for handling guns, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's an interesting phenomenon. In my fight against lobotomy, I work with Congress. I actually wrote some legislation. And the support I got was from conservatives who thought lobotomy was wrong because it tampered with God's given mind and brain. Mm-hmm. And from the Black Caucus, because I had disclosed that the Harvard people got their funding by claiming they could do surgery on ghetto rioters. And I also found out that they were operating on little black children at the University of Mississippi. The broad liberal community did not support me as anywhere near as much as the conservatives and libertarians and the Black Caucus. And I'm really concerned now that conservatives don't see that turning to psychiatry as a solution is ultimately totalitarian. They just don't see it.
Yes. It really surprised me, and I felt that that was very, very dangerous. Why do you think that the liberals did not support you in that previous effort?
Well, I think it's a social control issue. I mean, it was very interesting. At one point, I found out that the Kennedy daughter had been lobotomized before anybody publicized it. And Ted Kennedy was fighting me on the lobotomy issue. Hmm. I actually threatened, I was such a tough kid in my 30s and 40s. I threatened to disclose photos of Rosemary, you know, in her hospital where she was being kept with the notes about her being lobotomized to force Ted Kennedy to have hearings. On lobotomy. I think that in the liberal community, there are many people who do understand these issues, but there are many who so believe in psychiatry. You know, if you don't have a spiritual religion, psychiatry fills in your religion. Psychiatry says that we can tamper with the brain and make you better. We can find genetic causes which don't exist for mental disturbances. We can locate biochemical imbalances. It easily becomes a substitute ideology for believing we have free will, we have values, we have a soul.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a part of where liberals get caught, but many, many liberals support our work.
You know, it's interesting that you had mentioned that, too, that they see it as kind of a substitute for religion, because actually, you know, psyche means soul. So, you know, essentially psychology actually meant the study of the soul for people who really didn't have any religious connection or couldn't bring themselves to see a God, you know. So that does become kind of their God, I guess. And they've got these different schools of psychology, which I guess are kind of like religious denominations. You know, are you a Jungian or are you a Freudian or what? I guess those are...
Well, right, David. And it's a state-supported religion. It's like... Yeah. It's like Catholicism in the 14th century, because you have your National Institute of Mental Health, which is fundamentally a support group for psychiatry. You have your FDA, which legitimizes psychiatric drugs, none of which are really legitimate. I mean, they're usually studied for 3 or 4 or 5 weeks. They're completely controlled in the studies by the drug companies. So you have all these federal organizations. Even the Department of Education has supported the diagnosis of ADHD and the drugging of children. So psychiatry can be viewed in some ways as a materialistic, state-supported religion. Now, that's not its intention. It's not how it thinks of itself, but it sure is how it functions in many ways.
Boy, that is an amazing insight. I couldn't agree with you more. That's truly amazing. I want to continue talking to you about SSRI stuff when we come back. You know, one of the things that you mentioned earlier was the FDA cover-up of the drug trials for Eli Lilly and other companies that were making SSRI drugs. I mean, when you look at this drug approval process, a lot of times I think the FDA is so in bed with these drug companies that essentially what they do is give them, their purpose is not really to protect the public, but to give them legal immunity in lawsuits. Wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. The FDA has yet to even study electroshock machines. They've given shock machines a free ride. And finally, they were pressured recently into saying they were going to actually require shock machines to be tested, but they've done nothing about it. The FDA probably does more harm than good, at least in the area I know of psychiatry, shock, and psychosurgery.
We're talking to Dr. Peter Bregan, an expert witness on SSRIs and other psychiatric issues. We're going to be right back after the break. One more segment with Dr. Peter Bregan. Stay with us.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Welcome back to The Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and I've been talking to Dr. Peter Bregan. He's a psychiatrist, an expert witness in many cases about the effects of SSRI drugs. We were just talking before the break about how the FDA actually empowers and provides cover for drug companies, how they selectively cherry-picked their drug studies so they could get the results that they wanted. Dr. Bregan, in this last segment that we've got that's kind of short, I want to talk to you about the executive orders that Obama came out with as part of Obamacare. You wrote an article saying that his executive orders vastly empowered psychiatry and gutted patient rights. Can you talk to us a little bit about your concerns about the kind of mandates that are part of the Affordable Care Act, or as we typically refer to it as Obamacare, those kind of mandates and the effect that they're going to have against patients' rights and in favor of the psychiatric community?
Well, remember that psychiatric records are considered medical records. Therapy records are considered medical records. All of them are covered by insurance or will be eventually covered by insurance, or they'll have to opt out for privacy. And all of that is going to these central collection agencies, you know, that are sprinkled throughout the states to bring together all the data and to organize it electronically. There is no way that that's going to remain private forever. I mean, we have corporations being broken into. We have the Pentagon's computers being broken into. Yeah. There's no way that your health records are going to stay private. And you have to be really careful now about telling any healthcare provider anything personal about yourself, which is an absolute disaster. And Obama was also calling for a strengthening of the ability to lock people up against their will. There's no way psychiatry can discern who's violent and who is even harmful to themselves. What that results in when you increase involuntary treatment is you might have to put away 10,000 people to stop one person from causing harm, and you'll never even know if you stopped that one person because there's just no way to figure all that out.
Oh, yeah.
Empowering psychiatry is a disaster.
I've always said that when people give up their liberty for security, they wind up in a maximum security cell, and that's literally what will happen. Yeah, that's literally what will happen.
That's really, really good. I'd like to address two positive things, if I could, quickly.
Sure. Yes.
One is, don't rush and just stop taking your psychiatric drugs after listening to us today, because stopping drugs is as dangerous as starting them, because it throws your brain out of balance once again. And I've written a book called Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, which talks about safe and effective withdrawal from drugs. The other point I want to say is, whether you believe your brain is God-given or evolution-given, you have within yourself the power to overcome your worst emotional suffering. You have the power within yourself to regain your autonomy. You can become more and more self-determined. The key to a good life is moral, ethical, and principled relationships with other human beings. And human beings heal each other. Mechanics doesn't heal us. Psychiatry doesn't heal us. You know, don't accept this cultural avalanche that is robbing us of our belief in ourselves as souls, as human beings who can handle our own lives. And if we need help, we need human, caring, loving help. We don't need destructive interventions into our brains, whether it's stimulants for our children or
that is so wise. Excellent, excellent advice from Dr. Peter Breggin. If you want to know more about him, to find his books, you can go to Breggin.com. And I would suggest you do. A very wise man. Excellent advice. Thank you so much, Dr. Peter Breggin, for joining us. We're going to be right back, and we're going to have more news from the border. Stay with us.
This is GCN, the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight here in Austin, and we have reporters in El Paso at the border looking at what's going on there. We have a Red Link story up at Infowars.com. Border Patrol says cartels are using de facto amnesty to smuggle, quote, whatever they want, unquote, into the United States. And of course, they're saying they don't know who or what is coming in. They said also that they are using the massive influx of immigrants that's being driven by the drug cartels to distract them. This is an amazing interview. We're going to play some of that interview for you. And we're also going to be going in the next segment live to El Paso to talk to Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs. And there's some more information coming out of there. There's an article up on the Drudge Report about the Border Patrol agents are testing positive now for diseases that are being carried by immigrants. And those are things like TB, scabies, chickenpox. Well, in this interview with the Border Patrol agents that are in the area, we have some new revelations about disease and its transmission coming across the border and the CDC's reaction to it, which is really going to amaze you. But let's play a little bit of that report that's up now at Infowars.com. This is an interview with the vice president of the Border Patrol Union in El Paso.
My name is Stu Harris. I'm first vice president with Local 1929 of the National Border Patrol Council. Right now, the biggest concern, obviously, is this Central American invasion that's happening right now, and not just the humanitarian aspect of it, because what we know is that the cartels control the smuggling routes, and it's the cartels that are pushing these people from Central America across the river instead of taking them to a port of entry where, if they turn themselves in at a port of entry, the end result is going to be the same. So it's the cartels pushing these groups across the river to tie up our agents. And meanwhile, our agents are tied up processing, you know, feeding these people, changing diapers. And the drug cartels are running whatever or whoever they want across the border and other places. And who or what is coming in, we don't know. And we won't know until something bad happens. And that right now is the biggest concern that we have. And this has to be addressed. We want to make sure they're not carrying any infectious diseases or contagious diseases, so our agents aren't put in harm's way unnecessarily. Once that's done, obviously, you know, medical evaluation if they need it. If they're asking for any kind of medical assistance, we'll provide what we can there. And then they're taken to a processing center where they either wait to be processed or they're sent to El Paso or Tucson, and they're run through the system, fingerprints, all nine yards. They're issued a packet. They're given a notice to appear before a judge, and they're released. You know, a lot of what we're hearing in the media and other places is that, you know, the conditions in Central America, economic, they're just horrible conditions. There's violence. There's gang violence. And that's true. And you know, that's a terrible way to have to live. But that's been going on for more than 10 years, okay? So for this invasion to start suddenly happening, something else had to change. And what changed was the fact that we were engaging in this catch-and-release program. And word spreads
fast. I think that's a key thing. We're going to have the rest of that report, and we're going to be talking to Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs, who is at the border there in El Paso. He's the one who did the interview. He and Rob Dew are out there. We're going to talk to him about some additional revelations that they've learned about disease, about the CDC and their reaction to this immigration surge. But that point that he made right there, he said there's been violence and hardship and economic conditions for decades down there. What changed this suddenly? Well, of course, it's the catch and release program. It's the change in the policy from the Obama administration. This is something that is, as many Border Patrol agents have said, as they've seen their jobs change from law enforcement and border enforcement to essentially helping the people who come across, facilitating them to come 1,500 miles into the country, as Adan Salazar's article on InfoWars points out. We're going to be right back from the border in El Paso with Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs. Stay with us.
Crashing through the lies and disinformation, it's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight here in Austin, and I'm joined this segment by Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs, who's on the border at El Paso. Now, we have an article that's linked up on Infowars.com where the Border Patrol says cartels are using de facto amnesty to smuggle, quote, whatever they want, unquote, into the United States. And this is an amazing interview. It's an exclusive interview that's up on InfoWars.com, and we have Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs. Joe Biggs, you've got some updates to this as well, but first I want to ask you about the morale of the Border Patrol agents. We've seen a lot of articles from them saying that morale, they actually tweeted out that morale was low, that they've changed from law enforcement. They don't even talk about that anymore. Now they're concerned about preparing meals, changing diapers, transporting people into the interior of the United States, essentially just ignoring the laws that are on the books. How's their morale?
Right now, from what Stu Harris told us yesterday, the guy that's in the interview, he said it is the lowest. I mean, it is probably one of the worst jobs to have right now in the federal government. I mean, these guys are essentially being pulled off their duties to protect our borders and go out now and babysit these kids. They're doing paperwork and leaving these wide gaps open on our borders. I mean, they're out looking for jobs currently right now to go somewhere else because they don't want to deal with this anymore.
Hang on right there. I want to go back and play part of that interview where he talks about that. Let's let him tell the audience exactly how he feels. Go back. Let's play that clip.
You know, a lot of what we're hearing in the media and other places is that, you know, the conditions in Central America, economic, they're just horrible conditions. There's violence. There's gang violence. And that's true. And you know, that's a terrible, terrible way to have to live. But that's been going on for more than 10 years. Okay, so for this invasion to start suddenly happening, something else had to change. And what changed was the fact that we were engaging in this catch and release program. And word spreads fast. And our agents are interviewing these people when they're being processed. And one of the things I ask them, so why come now? And the answer is 90% of the time, because you're going to give me a permiso or a permit. They know they're going to be processed and released. And they're free to go wherever they want to go in the United States. And the likelihood of them ever showing up is, you know, for their court date, slim to none. And, you know, even if they did show up for their court date, what we're going to start seeing is what we call the anchor babies. Okay, because these court dates are being set, from what I understand, so far down the road. These people are going to come here. They're going to settle in. Some of them are going to have children. Those children are now United States citizens. How is the judge going to deport these people if they have a United States citizen as a child? He's not, even if they did show up. So that's a problem. I don't have an exact number on it. If I had to guess, I would say probably about 90% of these people, once they're here, they're here. And they're not going to go before an immigration judge knowing that they could be facing deportation. We're absolutely against amnesty. You know, amnesty is been touted as, you know, we need to bring these people out of the shadows, and well, that's all well and good, but we shouldn't be letting them go into the shadows in the first place like we're doing right now. So amnesty is not the answer. Well, it is a huge burden, and I'm sure you know DHS has been rated one of the worst places to work in the federal government, And that's because of the morale issue. Now you pile a situation like this on top, you know, our agents are looking for jobs elsewhere. You know, some are ready to leave for and go back to their hometown, work for their local police department. So it's a huge burden. Morale is the worst that it's ever been by far. And again, this situation has to be addressed. I know of at least one from our sector that transferred to another job. And I know more of our agents are looking. Right now, in places other than the Rio Grande Valley sector, our agents are being pulled off the line in less than their 10-hour shifts because of the budget concerns. And so it's exposing some areas. But we're starting to see what's happening in the Rio Grande Valley sector. We're starting to see that here. We've had upwards of 70 people from Central America just turn themselves into the agents here. So this is a Southwest border problem, and it's also a problem for the United States because these people are going throughout the United States. It's hard to say. I mean,
so you said it's averaging about 100, 150 a day almost?
Yeah, about 100, 150 a day. That's about the best number I could put on it. You know, if they do the right thing and start detaining these people and not catch and release like they are now, the problem as far as the Central American invasion that's going on right now will stop. As we've seen it in the past, we've seen it, I think it was in 2004, we had a lot of people from Brazil that were coming in. Not at this magnitude, but that's what was happening here. And when we started detaining those people, it stopped. As far as how many people are getting biased that we don't know about, I just don't know how you can put a number on something that you don't see or something that you can't physically count.
Okay, that's Stu Harris. He's the vice president of a local Border Patrol union there in El Paso, interviewed by Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs. Joe, what is their concern about the people that are coming across?
Well, the big thing is the use of these children, this humanitarian crisis beard to cover up what's really going on. The drug cartels are using these kids, funneling them in, all the attention's on them. Meanwhile, these big gaps are left open in these borders, and, you know, Chinese, Pakistani, different people are now able to travel in these gapped walls and smuggle drugs and terrorists. And that's a huge issue right now, he said.
Yeah, that's one of the things in the headline. He says, we don't know who's coming in. We don't know what's coming in. There's, as you pointed out, they're using the idea that this is all exclusively children as a beard, as a distraction, so that they can bring in people associated with the drug cartel or also people who might be involved in terrorism or other nationalities, not necessarily even people from Central or South America, but also people who might be from the Middle East, might be from China, might be from India. We've heard reports of that happening at the border as well, haven't we?
Yes. I mean, another one of the things that he brought up yesterday as well is what kind of parents are putting their kids on these trains that the drug cartel's running and just shipping them off for the drug cartel, you know, with God knows where, if they're going to show up or not.
Yes. Now, there was an article that was up on Drudge about some of the Border Patrol agents are now testing positive for some of the diseases that are coming through. Tell us what he said about the CDC's attitude towards this, Center for Disease Control.
Yeah, I asked him about some of the diseases I heard. I asked him, I was like, well, you know, what is the possibility of infectious disease and passing over to our borders? And he said, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked that. He said, I personally called CDC because of that problem, and they said that it's not their concern. It's not their issue. So right now, they don't even have any plans to come down here and look into this. Meanwhile, yesterday, he sent me a text saying that the last group that came through yesterday was about 150 people, had scabies, chicken pox, and lice, and these people are being caught and then released out into our country.
Wow. So the CDC essentially says it's not their job.
They're not concerned about it, one bit whatsoever. Meanwhile, our border's wide open, and this stuff's just coming right into our country.
Wow. Is that interview going to go up as another article about the CDC's attitude?
Yes, roger that.
Man.
I mean, another thing was, you know, you could tell when you watched the video, he seemed very nervous. You know, a lot of these guys are being told not to talk, and we know that the Border Patrol in general, they were told not to speak to media at all. I mean, they, you know, threatened to lose their jobs and things like that. So, I mean, that's just another one of those.
I've been told, hang on, Joe, I've been told by Nico here that he's got that clip queued. Let's hear what they had to say about the CDC.
All right, today we spoke to Stuart Harris. He's the vice president of the Border Patrol Union Association here in El Paso, Texas.
We got reports today, I was actually reading, that there was a swine flu outbreak at the Lackland Air Force Base.
Right.
Up there, and I've been there recently and, you know, spoke with DHS and some people up there.
Anybody that comes into this country could be bringing a disease. But the bigger concern here with that particular issue is the fact that you may have 1,000 people housed in the same area, and all it takes is one or two with an infectious disease, and you've got a problem on your hands.
Now, are these actual licensed people who, you know, check for diseases, or are these just Border Patrol agents just trying to do what they can based off what, you know, bit of equipment they have, or is there like some CDC personnel or something like that?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned CDC. I actually called the CDC for, you know, to see if this would be something that they were interested in, and I was informed that since they're not a regulatory body, they had no interest in this issue.
Wow.
But, yeah. But our Border Patrol agents, we have, you know, a good number of agents that are trained as emergency medical technicians, and when the people from RGV come here to El Paso, that's part of the process here, is they go through that medical screening with the EMTs, and then they're sent out to other stations in the sector.
Well, we definitely need to get a hold of CDC. That's pretty ridiculous. I mean, the borders are wide open, all these people are coming, and you think they would want to check that out?
That's why I called them. I thought they might be interested in it. But
one of the questions I asked him earlier was, are any of these kids or immigrants coming in from Central America carrying diseases? And he said yes. And I got a text maybe about an hour ago, and he said that out of the group that came in today, they had chicken pox, scabies, and lice. And the people who are scanning these guys for diseases are just regular Border Patrol with some EMT training. They are not CDC personnel. Stuart Harris said that he tried to contact the CDC, and they refused to come down here. They said it's a situation that they feel like is not worth looking into.
Wow, that's amazing. So it appears, Joe, that the fix seems to be in. The CDC is going to play along like many others in the bureaucracy and the mainstream media. They see no evil. They hear no evil. They're just going to essentially ignore it.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't understand. I mean, that it's so unbelievable that they would not want to come and check this out. Like I said, especially for however 150 to get through that they know about, there's probably another 150 to 200 people to get through that we don't know about.
Well, that's amazing. We certainly appreciate the Border Patrol agents who are speaking up about what's going on there. We're going to have some more information from Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs at the border of El Paso and Mexico. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and I'm joined on the phone with Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs, who's on the border between El Paso, Texas, and Mexico. He's spoken on a couple occasions to the vice president of the local border control union. They're a fellow who has told us, and we have an article up on Infowars.com, that the cartels are using amnesty to smuggle whatever they want into the United States. Very concerned about that. Morale is very low amongst the Border Patrol agents. And I wanted to ask you, Staff Sergeant, what about their fear of recrimination?
Yeah, he said that's one of the things. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, he said that's one of the things that a lot of the agents are, you know, are worried about. They're being told not to talk. So it's already being frustrated with your job and not being able to do what you're paid to do. And then on top of that, being told if you talk to media whatsoever that you could lose your job, you know, that's going through a lot of their minds. I mean, they see us come up with a camera, they immediately just turn around and want to get out of there.
That, to me, is really telling. You know, one of the things that he said in this interview was that, of course, these economic conditions and the violence that's been going on in Central and South America with the drug wars there, he says that's been going on for more than 10 years. So why did this suddenly change? Well, it changed in response to the Obama administration's catch and release program. So they're very concerned about that, but they don't want anybody to talk about that. They want to gag that from anyone. The public is not supposed to know what's going on. And, of course, the CDC, as he pointed out to you in the last segment we were just talking about, the CDC doesn't want to know about diseases that are coming across. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, the thing with the three monkeys, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. You know, they don't want to know or talk about or completely ignore this.
Yeah, he said that the simplest way to end this entire problem would be in that catch and release program. I mean, it's as simple as that. But it's not going to happen because we need our dreamers to come across the border and, you know, get the votes in.
That's just amazing. And, of course, when he talked about the CDC not being concerned about tuberculosis, about scabies, about chickenpox coming across the border, I mean, look at the propaganda that we get all the time about flu vaccines, and yet they're not concerned about any of this stuff. We've got a virus detected in Mexico. I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly. It's chikungunya or something. It's out of Mexico. It's chikungunya. And this is a virus that spreads through mosquito bites, gives you fever, headache, nausea, vomiting, rash, muscle, or joint pain, incapacitating joint pain. Very severe pain. This is something that is in Mexico now. Anybody that's either coming from Mexico or passing through Mexico, coming from South America, as many of these people are, they could possibly be bringing that in as well. These are not trained medical staff that they have there. When they ask for the CDC to help them, the CDC says that's not our job.
Yeah, when you said that they were scanning people for these viruses, I was sitting there thinking, well, then CDC has to be down here. It's like, no, these are just Border Patrol agents who have gone through very, you know, basic EMT training, EMTB training. So, I mean, that's mind-blowing. I went to EMT school, and I definitely would not know how to deal with diseases, you know, on that level.
So what are they saying, in their estimation, what did he say was the number that they were estimating that they're seeing coming through, and how many do they think are coming through that they're not seeing?
150 per day that they know of in that ballpark. And they said it'd probably be anywhere from about another 150 to 200 that they don't know about because there's spots that are being left. And we put up a video the other day. Actually, we were out filming some B-roll looking into Juarez over I-10 at the Rio Grande. And the Border Patrol vehicle pulls up, opens the gate, and drives off. And we sat for a few hours. No one comes back. No one locks that gate. That was a main gate left open right on I-10 into the city of El Paso in a slum part of Juarez, Mexico.
Well, you know, that actually, Joe, that's kind of a metaphor, isn't it, for what's going on all the way across the border. They've just put it wide open. They're not going to allow you, however, to come into this country through an airport without going through customs, without going through multiple screenings by Homeland Security, without having your passport vetted. But the border, they just leave wide open. Amazing how the hypocrisy of what's going on at the border and contrasting that with the way they treat us here in this country. Thank you so much, Joe Biggs, reporting live from El Paso. Check out that article on Infowars.com, the interview, cartels using de facto amnesty to smuggle whatever they want into the United States. Now, coming up, we've got a report from Alex Jones we're going to come to right after the break. You know, Friday is the day that new releases come out in the movie theaters. Now, this is not coming out today, but we have a first look at the sequel to Prometheus, Prometheus 2 Paradise. Alex Jones is going to break down what's been leaked about that, tell you what is behind that. So don't miss that special report coming up right after the break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Live from the Infowars.com studios, it's Alex Jones.
Well, it's not coming out until March 4th, 2016, Prometheus 2. But just like we gave you the first sneak peek before Prometheus 1 came out, we're set to do it here again today at Infowars.com. Prometheus itself is just a backdrop to project a larger discussion onto the greatest question really ever posed. Where do we come from? Who are we? Where are we going? What is our place in the universe? And we're going to go back and look at my review of Prometheus 6 months or so before it came out a few years ago. And then we're going to give you a sneak peek from our sources without giving away too much on what is going to be in Prometheus 2. So first look at Prometheus 2 here today. Now, I want to be clear. This breakdown is not an assault on Christianity, which is my faith, but my faith is not the Christianity promoted by the mainline preachers, many of them themselves dogmatically controlled by their administrations and state-run systems to keep the public unaware of what the elite themselves believe, which is not necessarily what I believe. But it's important to understand the governing system of the establishment if we hope to beat them. Now, the elite themselves see themselves becoming the master engineers. Ray Kurzweil, that heads up Google's future technology development, has said he doesn't believe in God yet, but that he will soon become God, and that those of us that don't accept this will be stepped on. They're saying it's the end of humanity, they've decided we're garbage, and that they're going to merge with the machines and become these godlike creatures. They're now playing the part they see as God, preparing for a new overwrite, not by water, not by fire, but by genetic engineering, a.k.a. The Prometheus model. And then there's also the point of AI technology. Will it end up being dominant over humans that have been discarded? Or will it be the super genetic engineering family that becomes dominant? Now, there are a lot of good things in the fire of Prometheus. That technology, genetic engineering, could help us. With frogs and other amphibians, we could grow back limbs. We could grow back eyes. We could have brain chips that help us live longer and not have Parkinson's. A lot of that already exists, and DARPA's acting like they just now rolled it out. The larger problem is there are thousands of companies and tens of thousands of experiments going on with human embryonic cloning for at least 30 years that was kept secret until a few years ago, splicing humans with animals, really nightmare things that eclipse anything you see in Hollywood, in any film for that matter, not just Prometheus. Here's a few articles. Growing human organs inside pigs in Japan. Glowing in the dark monkeys that are part jellyfish you can buy in Hong Kong bazaars. Artificial human ears grown in labs. I mean, there are literally thousands of examples of this going on, and families already paying for designer babies that have certain color eyes or will be taller than the parents, even though they admit they don't understand DNA, and that when you randomly change one piece of DNA, it then releases all these other thousands of combinations and entire separate genomes of humans and other species not known on this planet that are in our genetics. And that is in the New York Times. I remember interviewing people 20 years ago, almost 20 years ago, on this subject of epigenetics, that the fact is we're like a book with chapters as we grow, and the environment will influence how we manifest the genes that are already there. They're telling you that you get cancer and cancer is going up because you have bad genes. No, the environment is manifesting things that are triggering our genes to do that. Here's an article in the New York Times, DNA double take. And the way I had this described to me 15 years ago by a top genetic engineer I was interviewing was, it's like taking a picture of a tiger. That was the gene sequencing at Cold Springs Harbor by IBM that happened by 2000. They didn't have a tiger. They didn't know a tiger. They didn't have it with them. It couldn't reproduce. They had a photo of a tiger and were claiming that they had a tiger. But now we know it's bigger than that. And that's why so many atheists that are genetic engineers now believe in God or aliens or the fact that humans were seeded here, because there's no way the so-called evolution theory. See, the mainline Christians that follow dogma put out to make Christians look bad, they're there to discredit Christianity and make it look unscientific. The truth is everything in it affirms it. And then you've got the other dogma religious people that only believe in the official version of evolution when we know it comes in big jumps instantly, pretty much. And that's what this says. It says there's no way humans were basically from this planet. And there's no way, and we've got all this DNA that isn't even, you know, it's other humans but other things, and it's freaking them out. Well, it should freak them out. 10 ways science is using human-animal hybrids. Again, the chimeras. The mouse was with the ear was 30 years ago, folks. They're just now announcing this to the public. FDA considering three-parent embryos. Will that even be a human? This lets the master engineers piggyback and Trojan horse into this so-called humanoid, whatever they want, just like they Trojan horse stuff into your dishwasher that spies on you with smart meters and your cell phone or your new digital wristwatch. It's not the technology's bad. It's that the people running it are bad. FDA panel debates technique that would create, again, three parents. Genetically modified babies, New York Times. Because I talk about spider goats 15, 20 years ago. People thought I was lying, even though I had the CEO on of part spider, part goat creatures to create body armor. Again, here's Time Magazine, Prometheus 101, the science behind Ridley Scott's vision of aliens populating Earth. It's not such a crazy idea. Research has long supported the theory that life originated elsewhere. Again, they're telling you their religion here. Okay? Evolution is discredited. It's not the way things happen. Cars evolve. Culture evolves. There is definitely change in species, change in genetic lines. I'm not saying some of it doesn't happen, but it's a very small part of the larger issue here that we're dealing with. Ridley Scott's Prometheus rests on real astronomy, another mainline headline. Seeding life through the universe, another article. Humans did not come from Earth, and sunburn, bad backs, and pain during labor prove it, expert claims. Daily Mail. Alien poll finds half of Americans think extraterrestrial life exists. All these different Earth-like planets that are being found with the super telescopes they've got now. Here's Wall Street Journal about Earth-sized planet with water could exist, could be discovered. On and on and on. Stephen Hawking says it obviously exists and that the aliens will probably destroy us. And I have been able to talk to folks that have seen a script out in Hollywood. It's all very secretive, but we do know the basic line of it. And it's about a human journey of humans discovering where we came from. But does that mean it's even true from the perspective that Hollywood is selling in this? The point is, this is a larger window into a discussion of where we came from. And when you have that discussion, the reason I think that discussion is a good discussion, it will then lead people not just into fables and not just into conjecture, but to what humans are building and creating now that gives us a window into the DNA we have and what may have been in the past in other creations that the Bible clearly speaks of before the allegory of Adam and Eve. And again, ladies and gentlemen, we need to continue to brainstorm on these subjects and to talk about it. And then to realize this discussion allows us to transcend the social engineers who are trying to become demigods, who openly believe that we are their cattle to be experimented on and manipulated in their quest to become omnipotent gods, when clearly they are the most selfish, greedy, anti-human, anti-God type individuals I could ever imagine. These people follow the archetype of the devil, or the destroyer, or those that seek to suppress human enlightenment and human empowerment. So that is your sneak peek at Prometheus 2. You're living it, ladies and gentlemen. This is what's fantastic, is life on this planet, not this film that's coming up. But if we can hijack the discussion of it and use it to direct people out of the Hollywood system into the larger universe, it certainly has borne some positive fruit, and that's what we attempt to do here at InfoWars.com.
Ridley Scott, arguably one of the greatest living directors, is set to release a prequel to his 1979 mega-hit, Alien, Prometheus. One of the most anticipated sci-fi films in recent memory, InfoWars.com research analysis shows Prometheus is not just a film, but a revelation of the method, revealing the deepest secrets of the Illuminati mystery religion. I do have a lot of contacts in the media, as viewers and listeners know, and I have been able to secure a copy of an early script, and it follows very closely from the trailer I've seen and other leaks. And I'm not going to give the entire film away here, but in synopsis, this is a film about the origins of humankind with a super race of near immortal genetic engineers who are contemplating a genetic overwrite or rewrite of the planet Earth. When meddling humans stumble in to the magician's laboratory, they are punished for their trespass.
It was so wrong.
The so-called space jockey is the advanced species that have engineered humans back on Earth and produced the bioweapon that we know of as the classical alien that burst out of your chest after feeding on the food in your intestines. The reason we're taking time out to examine Prometheus is because its storyline, its plot, mirrors that of many ancient societies. And the ideas presented in Prometheus are at the core of Western secret societies.
These are ancient civilizations that were separated by centuries, and yet this same pictogram was discovered in every one of them.
Please tell me you can read that.
I think they want us to come and find them.
Across the world, we see evidence of early civilizations' obsession with what they believed were off-world influences. From the Nazca lines in South America to the pyramids of Egypt, we see artifacts, testament to early man's obsession with off-world manipulators. Every ancient culture believed they were communicating with men from the sky. Ezekiel with spinning wheels of fire landing, and creatures with blue space helmets approaching Ezekiel and giving him a drug to take, and then he has wild hallucinations. One could say that Prometheus is simply art imitating life and putting a 21st century spin on the beliefs of the Dogon tribe in Africa and the Aztecs of Mesoamerica. Eric Von Doniger, more than any other living person, has popularized the idea of chariots of the gods and that our planet has been visited and manipulated by off-world creatures for thousands of years. But the systems that he popularized were regurgitated whole cloth from ideas developed by the ruling class of this planet. And I want to be clear. Every major globalist we look at, going back more than 160 years, is completely and totally obsessed with the idea that off-world aliens are controlling this planet and giving them hidden knowledge. By the 1870s, T.H. Huxley Group and their X-Club was dominating the Royal Society in England. The dominant theory within the X-Club was that humans had been seeded here, along with most other life forms, by advanced beings from space. From the inception of Darwin's theory on the origin of species, evolutionary scientists never believed for a minute that life simply started on its own. That evolution is not some random, slow system developing by chance, but is actually directed by off-world seeders, terraformers, creators of worlds. Even the discoverer of DNA, Francis Crick, promotes the idea that life was seeded on this planet in what he calls directed panspermia. It is part of the larger myth of transhumanism. Huxley, Darwin, Wedgwood, the Galtons, they all interbred in an attempt to create this transcendent Superman. The governing class of this globe believes that they are channeling advanced technological systems given to them by ancient alien species. And the science fiction of the last 150 years, whether it's Jules Verne or H.G. Wells or those that came before them, is obsessed with this, and they're on record part of secret societies who believe what they're promoting is actually reality, but knowing that the public is not ready to accept it, they cover it under the guise of fiction. And the film Prometheus is completely constructed around the secret religion of the Illuminati, who believe that they are transcendent and becoming the Superman.
We can create cybernetic individuals. We are the gods now.
Blurring the lines between fiction and reality, we see a futuristic presentation of the technology conference TED. The keynote speaker is the founder of the Wayland Corporation, Mr. Wayland. There he describes Prometheus stealing fire from the gods.
From the Titan Prometheus, our first true piece of technology, fire.
The transference of fire, or the first technology to man, is only the beginning of his transgressions. Prometheus is a titan and the creator of mankind who attempts to elevate humans to the level of gods and is punished. The Illuminati believe they have stolen the fire of true genius from the gods.
biotech, nanotech, fusion.
As man attempts to become godlike, we release potential forces that can and probably will destroy us. I want to say this in summation. We're not facing off-world genetic engineers that the elite believes created this planet, whether that's true or not. We're facing the global technocrats that are splicing every plant and animal and insect you can imagine together, that are creating chimeras with hundreds of species within them, giving rise to superviruses and bacterial mutations. We are already seeing within three generations in rodents total sterilization and massive deformities in these animals. And we have proven from the Rockefeller Foundation documents and other reports that this is part of a long-term program to wreck the general public's DNA. This is the global elite who have fantasized about off-world genetic engineers creating them, actually in a 160-year-plus program, developing the sciences and technologies to put this into place. Whatever you say about the Illuminati, they have got patience and they have had incredible vision. But I believe humanity needs to hear the truth and understand that this is being carried out against us all. Because we have a choice to stand up now, but only a short window, and say no. I know the plot of the film. I know how it ends. But I'm going to leave that for you to discover. The point is, the film itself is only a revelation of the method, an externalization of the hierarchy.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. Now, if you want to see that special report from Alex Jones, it is live on YouTube. We also have an article up on Infowars.com. It has a common thread, really, with what we were talking to Dr. Peter Bregan about earlier. You know, as I was watching that, and Alex is talking about how they're messing with DNA, how Dr. Bregan was talking about how they're messing with brains, things that they don't really understand, but they don't really care because they have no regard for the test subjects that they're doing this to, and they have no regard for humanity. So check out that special report, pass it along. We also have another article that's up on InfoWars. So we have multiple teams of reporters at the border. This is an article that's coming and an interview that's coming from John Bound, put up by John Bound and Kit Daniels. Illegals are bankrupting small towns and border states. Small towns and counties and states bordering Mexico are drowning in debt due to the swarm of illegals who are stealing and destroying property, requiring expensive medical care, needing proper burial, all of which the federal government has largely refused to pay for. This is an interview that John Bound has with a judge down there, Judge Raul Ramirez. And one of the things that's very interesting in this report, the judge tells John Bound that they've had so many people coming across the border with rattlesnake bites that they're having to pay for the very expensive anti-venom shots. And, of course, they can only get that out of a large city, out of Corpus Christi. It's bankrupting them to get this expensive anti-venom. And, of course, it has to be transported on an emergency basis, either to transport the patients or transport the venom. So that's yet another stress on these cities. And, of course, they're getting absolutely no help from the federal government that is opening the borders. As Joe Biggs told us earlier, he and Rob Dew saw them leave a gate open. That's a metaphor for everything that the federal government is doing down there at the border. And yet, are they standing down at the airports? No. They're still x-raying people. They're still molesting children. They're still having us take off our shoes and our belts. And this is absolutely absurd. And this is the same organization, Homeland Security, that is running both of these operations. Now, if you want to stay up to date on the reports coming from our multiple teams at the border, check out Prison Planet TV. A subscription will help to fund our research, our operations down there at the border. You can share that subscription with other people. And, of course, you can get the latest news tonight. Darren McBreen is going to be your host there. That's at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. Also, you can help us by buying our products. We have a fluoride shield and a special on that, 25% off, exclusive blend of key herbs and ingredients. specifically infused with a formula to help support the elimination of toxic forms of fluoride and other things like mercury, chlorine, and bromine. That's available at InfoWarsLife.com. And we have these great new belt buckles that Alex got. It's a limited run of 500 belt buckles, the Made in 1776 series, and you can see those on the desk. There's a picture of it if you're looking at it. These belt buckles have essentially the same design that you see on that t-shirt. It's a great design. They put that in the center of the buckle with Moulin Lave on both sides. So if you haven't seen that, go to InfoWars store and check that out. It's a limited edition. Only 500 of these are being done per color, and there's just a couple of colors that are up there. I think it's three colors that we've got. There's another way to support our operation. We'll be back on Sunday, and we'll have the live show from 4 to 6. Again, check out this report from John Bound about how these towns, these small towns, are being bankrupted. And, of course, the crime that is happening there. These are areas where, essentially, these are ranchers who've been living there, sparsely populated areas. So when they have a massive amount of people coming across the border, and as the Border Patrol agents have said, many of those coming across are part of drug cartels. They're using the children as shields so they can get their cartel gang members across. We don't know, as far as we're looking to see if we can find people of other nationalities coming through that perhaps are from the Middle East. Of course, Al-Qaeda is in your pants at the airport, according to Homeland Security. Join us again on Sunday. Again, that is 4 p.m. Central Time.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.